I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of state.
We don't care if we live a bit late. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. Living out of date. I'm talking about phones and phone service and the end of landlines for today's feature interview on Out There, talking with some 80-some-year-old friends from Kentucky. Yes, today is Friday, January 23rd, 2026. I'm live in the studio, and I was in Kentucky for a month. Thank you, Mark Beauvais, for putting my shows in automation when I was gone, as usual. Thank you every week for that. And what else do I have for today? Well, I have a little clip from Dave, who was shoveling the rail trail. This was yesterday. I got a little clip from Northampton yesterday. Some guy named Dave, who's been shoveling the rail trail from Grove Street all the way to the Felt Building by hand with a shovel, like after every storm, which is got to be at least a third of a mile. I don't know. It's a ways. And what do I have? I might also have a clip from, this is from last fall, with my friend Matt Wallace, who does community garden stuff in Eastport, but I'm not sure if we'll get to that. What's today? So today's the 23rd of January. Monday was Martin Luther King Day. And so I'll start off with a song called The Ballad of Martin Luther King.
Time, my name is Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was born to a sharecropper's son, and every racist feared him, and he never owned a gun. And I've been to the mountaintop, today I have a dream. Don't you ever forget the words of Martin Luther King.
That's something, Sophia. Something so precious, something so eternally true that they are worth dying for. And I submit to you that if a man has not discovered something that he will die for, he isn't fit to live.
Now a bus line in Montgomery had some folks sitting in the back, and it was not a coincidence that all these folks were black. That Martin Luther King, he put a boycott on that town. He just walked with his people, and they shut that bus line down. And I've been to the mountaintop, today I have a dream. Don't you ever forget the words of Martin Luther King.
Let freedom ring, and when this happens, all the soft children, black men and white men, we'll be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Well, he preached and lived nonviolence until the very end. On a hotel porch in Memphis, mankind lost its best friend. 'Cause he fought for human rights as he rode from town to town. And that's what he was doing in Memphis when somebody shot him down. And I've been to the mountaintop, today I have a dream. But don't you ever forget the words of Martin Luther King.
I have a dream. One day right down in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls. As sisters and brothers, I have a dream today.
Well, it's time to take a look in that mirror on your wall. Did you help pull the trigger, or weren't you there at all? 'Cause they don't really know who shot you, but one thing's very clear. They killed this man with hatred, 'cause he wouldn't die.
die from fear. And I've been to the mountaintop. Today I have a dream. But don't you ever forget the words of Martin Luther King. And I've been to the mountaintop. Today I have a dream. My friends, those are the very words of Dr. Martin Luther King.
I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
The Ballad of Martin Luther King by Mike Milius and the Spiritual Warriors. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. There was an event on Monday, January 19th at Bombix, Martin Luther King Service Coordinator Service something day. I'm sorry, I wasn't able to attend, so I can't give any more update than that, but it was to link people up with organizations doing good work, I believe. Next on Out There, we have Dave. I'll try not to step on the part you haven't shoveled yet, because that's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I'm just the end of it. It's icy.
Yeah, so I'm on my way out to Valley Recycling to Cans for Cancer. And the Yeah, and I ran into Dave here out shoveling the path. Dave, so how much of this path are you shoveling?
Pretty much to town, to the felt mill.
Okay, so like building. the felt building, River Bridge.
This part hasn't been done traditionally. And I told them other paths, too, they could plow them. If they don't put too much salt on there, it helps the bike. Because if the salt really, you know, sometimes it's worse than the road.
But. Oh, yeah.
So I got that, and then I got people plowing over in Hadley. Someone, I said, maybe you'll get to your snow plowing job quicker. And so someone was plowing that, but then they made sidewalks for the bike halfway down through Hadley. I didn't go for that much. But if I had an ATV or something, it'd be a lot easier, more fun to plow.
Yeah, so this is
so
like...
So I told them, just if somebody is coming, you know, get out of the way with the snow blowers or whatever, you know, stop and let them go by, and that's pretty much how you...
Yeah, so this is like a third of a mile or half a mile?
It's a ways, yeah. In South Hadley, I did my parents, and the walkway was a corner lot, and then another corner lot for $10-$20 or something when I was younger. So
yeah, but this stretch right here, so it's kind of like a missing... Thanks, yeah, it's a missing link for people from...
Right, yeah, from there, yeah. I didn't think about it originally. I did just from the pathway where it connects there, where I come down the hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that'd open it up for everyone. So since then, it's kind of a charity gig.
Yeah. Have you been doing it? It seems like all winter. I've seen it clear all winter.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Someone did it once with a snowblower. I guess they didn't have enough to do the first snowstorm. But I don't think anyone's going
to. And your favorite shovel to do this?
Well, the sand shovel works.
It's like a square.
Square, and it's heavy and metal too, a little. That works better for the ice and stuff. It was all like the magic marker thing on the end, on the tip of a magic marker, kind of. You could shovel it up and whip it just up to there, but then it gets all icy. Yeah. If we get any sun.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 44 or something today.
Yeah, 40 degrees.
So where the zigzag is that just because there's icy patches?
Yeah, people, I can't cut
through this. I know. It's all packed down, wristed, walked on.
Yeah, that's kind of like magic.
How's your shoulders, arms, wrists,
pretty
everything?
Pretty good, yeah. I know how to do a little bit of chiropractic. Ow. Yeah. The knuckles in the back.
How long would you say it takes you to...
Someone else said that. They said, we'll help you, you know, do that. And I'm like, you're going to have medical bills if you don't know how to really stretch and whatnot the day after.
For sure. Well, I really appreciate it.
How long would you say it takes
good.
You? Well, I guess it depends on lots of factors.
I don't know. Usually I'm out in the afternoon, three, yeah. four, yeah. hour or two.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. And I'll use the bigger shovel. It's just this yeah. has to cut good. Through the
yeah. Yeah.
ice there.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
But I've been doing that all my life, so.
Yeah.
The same with biking.
Yeah.
A lot longer.
So is your yeah. do you know who went through with the snowblower?
Once somebody did, and someone went all the way to East Hampton. I don't know if it was a snowplow.
Oh, I saw somebody doing that. Sometimes on the other side of the bridge.
All right, that was Dave. And as you can tell by Dave's voice, he ain't no spring chicken. And that's a lot of shoveling to do. He's the guy, I didn't recognize him with a shovel, but when I see him on the path on a bike, I do recognize him. He's got some kind of crate, milk crate or crate on the back of his bike. But instead of being a square milk crate, it's a noticeable rectangular one that sticks out long behind his bike, kind of, sort of. Well, tell Dave thanks if you see him around on the path. Thanks for shoveling away for people on scooters, walking bikes, to have a little 2-foot-wide passageway to get from the skate park out to Grove Street mm-hmm. and the connector to Earl Street. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Next on Out There, speaking of people who ain't no spring chickens, I have an interview with some old family friends from Kentucky. This is Mark and Sally Smith. Now, Sally was my kindergarten teacher in 1980 at Frakes Elementary School. And Mark, how did I know Mark? Well, he was married to Sally. And Mark took me to school when I went to the Seventh-day Adventist school in Jellico. He gave me a ride to school with his son at one point a lot. Anyway, we've always been friends. They had a TV when we were growing up, so I would want to watch UK basketball on TV, men's basketball. That was all that was on TV. And so they would invite me over to their house to watch TV, sports on TV, and all kinds of great things that friends do. And Mark would give me granola bars in a package, which we didn't have processed food like that in my house. Anyway, oh, and now Mark and Sally, they're the people that whenever I go to or from Kentucky these days, they give me a ride from Knoxville back to Middlesbrough, Kentucky, which is 65 miles, I think. That's on usually Sundays because they go to church near Knoxville. And so I always coordinate my bus rides to and from Knoxville on a Sunday so I can get that ride back up to Kentucky with them. Very nice people. Oh, wait. Okay, so let me know. I was going to start with this other clip. Oh, yeah, I know what I was going to say. So this next part of Out There is about phones, telephones, and how that technology has changed. And the reason I got the idea to do a piece on this was because the last month when I was in Kentucky, my dad's landline went out. And my dad's 90 and not jumping around the house and porch and yard so well. So he said, Ruth, can you go take this phone and this jack and go check out in the box outside the house and see if the phone line is, if it's a problem from there where it comes into the house or if it's the phone company's problem beyond that box. So I went out and checked that and told him, it must be the phone company's problem. So he called the phone company, and I should say, well, he tried to because he got on hold. I think he was on hold for about 45 minutes. Yeah, 45 minutes. Well, the next day I was on hold for 66 minutes. But anyway, he reported the outage to the phone company, and then the next day, a day or two later, the landline was working again. And a repair guy came up the driveway. We live a third of a mile off the road, off the main road. And he said, I was just calling to make sure your phones were working again. And we said, yep, it's all good. And he said, yeah, they were stealing copper down in Davisburg again. And so everybody on up lost their phone service. And yep, that's what happens. And so I thought, So then after that, my dad, the next, a few days later, my dad said, you know what? I don't need this landline anymore. I'm paying $75 a month for a landline that only is for local calls. I can only call out locally, but I can receive calls from all over the world that are robo calls from call centers trying to sell me stuff all the time. And so this landline is not really worth it for me anymore. Even though the cell phone service isn't great and the Wi-Fi often goes out, I'm just done with this landline. The funny thing was the morning that he canceled his landline service, he was trying to use his cell phone, but there was no signal, and the Wi-Fi had gone out at the same time too, coincidentally. And he was like, "Wait, did AT&T cancel my cell service and Wi-Fi too?" So I was running around to the other houses trying to figure out, "Wait, did everybody lose Wi-Fi?" And then I ran up into the pasture and found that he had a cell signal, a weak cell signal up in the pasture. I said, "Oh, it's all just coincidence. I think you're good. You'll have Wi-Fi back again some minute soon, and your cell service was not affected by your canceling of the landline." All this technology gets confusing. Anyway, here's one little clip, and then I have Mark and Sally Smith coming up after this.
So will there also be copper? It's been replaced by the fiber optic.
Yeah. So they're wanting to eventually like go away with the landlines. They're wanting to do away with them, away with all the copper, and switch to the fiber. And if they're putting fiber in areas, I don't know if they're gonna force you to get off the copper, but I think they'll just. Guess, and I think they might start raising the price of the like the landline.
Yeah,
they'll just keep raising it and raising it until they kind of force you over to switch.
Yeah,
but I don't know. That's it works better. You know, you don't have any trouble with weather.
When you say going to fiber, you mean going to internet?
Yeah,
and not having a landline.
So, do you all have a landline?
No.
When did you get rid of your landline?
Sometime this year.
Wow.
We've had a landline for a long time.
Since
we moved in.
Yeah.
In 2004.
And you had a landline in Chenoa before that?
Oh, yes. You had to have a landline in Chenoa. But we did have a bag phone, and there were a couple places in the Frank School parking lot, seemed like there was a place that you could get service on the bag phone.
Bag phone?
It was in a bag.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bag like this, and that was your phone. I mean, that was your cell phone.
What years would you say that was?
Well, it was the last years that we were there, back in the turn of the century.
Back in the 90s.
1990s?
Yeah. Not the 1890s. No, smart aleck. In the 1990s.
Okay. Well, so now that you don't have your landline, you each have cell phones?
That is correct. So that if I can't find my cell phone, Mark can call it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if he can't find his, I'm not much help because he doesn't have his on very often. He turns his phone off.
So
and then you can't find him.
So, well, we're going to go back in time with communications technology. So, what is this here clickety click thing sitting on your shelf, Mark?
That clickety click thing is a Morse code key. And when I was in the Navy, I was a radioman, and mostly we were using more modern equipment, but we would have a drill circuit, we would practice using Morse code in transmitting messages, and basically, we were the last generation, I suspect, of people who learned Morse code in the Navy as radiomen. And I got to maybe 10 to 15 words per minute that I could transmit.
Can you, even though this has, the spring's long been broken, can you make any, can you use it a little bit? And do you still remember stuff?
That was NKPS, which was our call sign. We used that. If you heard a transmission, you just hear a bunch of beeps. And the long and the short forms Morse code. And somebody who's really skilled at Morse code could do maybe 25, 30 words a minute. But I was happy to do 12 to 15 words a minute. One time, I was on this drill circuit in the morning. We would, every morning at a certain time, we would get on and pass messages back and forth. There were letter codes, such as QRU and QRV, which indicated, I think QRV maybe indicated, I have one message to pass. Can you pass this, relay this message for us? And so I sent back an answer, yeah, Roger, go ahead. And as the message came in, I was typing, and I looked at what I was typing, and I said, this is Spanish. Find somebody who knows Spanish to make sure I've spelled this right. And so that was one thing that happened.
Wow. Can you do what you did a minute ago? Because it just sounded like me rattling the thing. So, Mark, you said you all were probably the last generation using what came. I don't know whether to ask what came before or what came next. Maybe we'll go.
What came next?
Yeah. Well, okay. What came next? Good to have a teacher here guiding me.
I don't know. What came after Morse code?
After Morse code, well, Morse code came in fairly early during the Civil War. That's how troops communicated with mm-hmm. Washington and communicated with each other, and also how they ran the railroad. That was all done with Morse code.
Yeah, so the taps that you were making on that connected to some electrical signal somewhere and like right. copper lines or what?
Yeah, copper, okay. All copper lines. Yeah. Yeah. And
so it wasn't of any value if it wasn't connected by wire.
Right, because like for today, for people today, they'd be like, oh, what, do you make that noise right in front of your phone? And
yeah.
I mean, your wireless cell phone.
Yeah. Well, of course, when Marconi came in and made it possible to broadcast that on the radio, that's when communication became international. You could talk to somebody on the other side of the world.
Marconi?
Oh.
Marconi?
Yeah, it's kind of like macaroni.
Yeah,
he invented the radio.
He perfected radio.
The tubes.
Uh-huh, yeah. Okay.
Communication.
So, what years were you doing this Morse code transmission?
That was in the middle 1960s.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, all right, so then... What? Sorry.
Well, before that, back in the 50s, I guess, yeah, because in 52, Brown was born in 52. Back in the 40s and 50s, in my experience, I don't know what they had before, but they had, the telephone company had operators, mm-hmm. and they had switchboards,
yeah.
and they actually, you know, plugged you into another number,
yeah.
and then they made it ring. But when we were growing up, my little brother, who was born in 52, would be bored or would want some attention, and he would pick up the phone and just talk to the operator.
Uh-huh.
Because there was a real live person there.
Uh-huh.
And when you picked up the phone, she would say, number, please.
Uh-huh.
And you would give her a number, and she'd say, thank you, or something, and plug you in. Or she would say, oh, that line is busy. If somebody was already plugged into that number. But anyway.
So this was in Middlesbrough, Kentucky.
Middlesbrough.
And so if your little brother picked up the phone, where was this
operator?
Woman?
Phone company was a little house that's right next door to the post office. And that was just the phone company. That's where all the operators came and did their shifts or whatever. And a lot of them were young, single women, I think, that did that. And my dad was a doctor. And so, you know, there were many times that there were calls from a hospital that needed to come through to him. And at that time, when I was a teenager, what was in the late 50s, and I'd be on the phone doing my homework with somebody or something, and the operator would break in, because all they'd have to do would be to override it. It wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be any problem. And they would say, there's an emergency call for 84, which was our number. And would you please hang up or clear the line or whatever? And I'd hang up. No sooner than I hang up, than the phone would ring, and it would be the hospital calling my dad to come and deliver a baby or do something, you know. And he got his call, and I'd be right back on the phone. It's one of those things that you didn't, I mean, nobody worried about you being on the phone all night, because they knew, you know, it could, they could break in, and you weren't, you know, whatever. And then, you know, there were party lines.
Yeah.
Where there were three or four different homes on the same number. And when we first moved out to Shenoah, we were on a party line. And if you were on a party line with somebody that talked all the time, you might as well just give up. But most people were real polite, you know, and you'd pick up the phone, you could just hear the people having their conversation, and you'd put it back down, and then, you know, maybe 15 minutes later, you'd pick it up and still be talking, and you might say, you know, excuse me, but I need the phone for just 2 minutes, you know, and you'd, and they'd say, okay, we'll finish our call, and then you could do it. But I mean, you could hear everything that was said, you know, and I think sometimes people listened.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of stories or rumors or gossip that got passed around. But we got a single party line as soon as we could. And then you didn't have that problem. But I don't know, because I'm not in a position where I need an emergency, you know, people would call. I don't know whether operators can break in now like they used to. I mean, it's all now, you know, in the great switchboard in the sky. You know, I don't know where it, there isn't any one big central place, I don't think.
Well, one thing, even if you had just a one-party line, back in the day, back in the 50s, back in the 60s, phone calls were expensive during the day. And phone calls got cheaper after about 7 o'clock at night. So if you wanted to talk to somebody and spend some time on the phone, especially long distance, it depended where you were calling, how much a phone call would cost. So people would wait until after 7 o'clock before calling somebody in another state.
Now, it used to be, at one time, I think it would cost to call Harrogate, you know, a Tennessee number, but you just had your little, you know, this was, Pineville was 337 and Middlesbrough was 248. That was the, you know, the the first three numbers. But well, I will tell you this story. When I was in college, and of course all these people that I knew were in college, and there were a couple of guys that were at UK, and I was at a girls' school up in Virginia. Anyway, they figured out that if they would dial so many of the numbers before 11 o'clock, and then dial the last number after 11 o'clock, they didn't get charged for the call. And so I would get phone calls from them all the time at 11 o'clock. Somebody come down the hall. There's a phone call for you on such and such. Well, then UK, I guess, started figuring it out. They were trying to figure out who in the world it was that was using their phone and, you know, not paying. So they called me and asked who was calling me. And I said, I don't know. But it's awfully late at night. And they said, yes, it is. And we're going to find out who it is. I said, okay, good luck or something. And I didn't tell. But they would call. Oh, and they'd be having the best time. I mean, because they figured out how to call for free. And these, and some of the, and these were guys. I mean, Bill Dean was one of the.
Oh, now the name's coming out.
I mean, these are guys that I've gone to school with since kindergarten and stuff. Mm-hmm. We were all just good buddies, but anyway, yes.
So, so back when your number was 84.
84.
So it's just like two numbers.
That's all. But you were just telling the operator. You weren't dialing anything.
Yeah.
You were just telling the operator. And somebody's number was like 1234 or the police, I think the police were 56 and the hospital was 93. But then soon, you know, my friend was 151. You got up in the, you know, and then it got up to four digits. I guess it would depend on when you got your phone.
Yeah. And when you heard that the phone numbers were going to be seven digits.
Oh, my gosh. I have an aunt. My aunt, my grandmother lives in Charlotte, and their phone number was Edison 41844. Now that's just come from. And we thought, how can you remember? You know, I could remember one person, but golly, 7 digits. Yeah, and of course I don't know when area code started, but. I don't know.
That would probably have been in the 60s sometime.
Yeah.
Well, I remember one of the tricks my older siblings used to do when they went off to this boarding high school in North Carolina, or when they went off to college. This was like in the 70s, 80s. Yeah. If they had a message, if they wanted to call home, and they had to, you know, tell my parents when spring break was or whatever, they call collect. Because I forget on the phone. You know, you call collect and they say, my parents would get a message saying, hey, you have a collect call from Jenny. And my parents would say, nope, won't accept.
Yeah.
And then call back immediately. That was a sign. Because my parents could call them, but they couldn't call
this way. A lot cheaper than collect calls.
Right, because collect calls are really expensive.
Or you would you would have a code or something with your family.
Yeah, that, right, yeah.
You know, if I call and tell them it's Susie Carr rather than Sally Carr, you know that meant something. Yeah. You know, yeah. I don't know how to do it with my parents, but we did it with friends and things. But and now I think about when we lived in Chenoa, which is a pretty isolated community, and it's 15 miles to Middlesboro. And, you know, when Annie and Richard first got their driver's license, well, first of all, we're so in touch with people now.
Uh-huh.
And my brother, who lives in Versailles, has a thing on his phone. He can pull it up, an app, and he can see where we are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's only because we agreed to let him do it, but he can. Yeah. And he'll sometimes text and he'll say, well, what in the world are you doing at such and such place? And I'm like, well, what in the world is it you're any of your business? but you know, the telephone has opened the whole world.
Yeah.
You know. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
That was an interview with my good friends, probably my best friends in Kentucky outside my family, Sally and Mark Smith from Middlesboro, Kentucky. Sally, oh, that interview was from a couple weeks ago. Sally was my kindergarten teacher. Mark was also a teacher, high school German teacher, among maybe other things. Sally's from Middlesboro, Kentucky, and Mark's from Tarryton, New York. I think Mark went down to the area for, I think he went down there for the, oh, I think he went to college down there. Then he may have stayed for the Methodist Mission, Henderson Settlement. Don't quote me on that. Anyway, oh, so we were talking about collect calls a little bit. So younger people today might not know what collect calls are, but that was where when someone wanted to call you, but they didn't have money, or maybe they're at a payphone, they would call you. An operator would pick up and relay the message that, Debbie, a collect call from Debbie for Jim. And that's what the operator says. And then you decide whether to accept it or not. And if you accept it, then you pay a certain rate per minute. But if you don't accept it, and you can call Debbie back because you know what number she's calling from, then you get a cheaper rate. Collect calls don't happen much anymore. Do they even exist? I don't know. Usually, to my knowledge, the calls from prisons and jails are the most recent receiving collect call experiences I've had, but that's been a while too, because everything's kind of online account, this, that, and the other. Speaking of technology, how about, it's time for a musical break, how about some Paul Simon? Usually I like to play a lot of female artists on Out There, but, not right now.
Shot. It's everybody jump start. It's every generation throws a hero up the pop charts. Medicine is magical and magical is art. Think of the boy in the bubble and the baby with the babbling heart. And I believe these are days. Lasers in the jungle. Lasers in the jungle somewhere. Staccato signals of constant information. A loose affiliation of millionaires and billionaires and baby. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is a long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all.
Paul Simon with The Boy in the Bubble. I think that's from like 1986. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I have a few announcements. Let's see. Well, tomorrow is Saturday, January 24th. And the last Out There show I did before I left, I talked about the death of my friend Kat Budziak. And we're having a memorial for her tomorrow, a memorial gathering. That will be from 3 to 5 p.m. at St. John's Church, 48 Elm Street in Northampton. That's the church on Smith College campus where the manna meal is hosted, with a big white tent and the Black Lives Matter banner out front. So that's tomorrow, Kat Budziak's memorial. Tomorrow from 3 to 5, we'll have a sharing circle starting at 3:30 is the idea, and some snacks. And it's supposed to be a high of 13 tomorrow and windy, last I heard. It'll be inside. I was hoping that we could do it outside last month. When I was in Kentucky, I thought, oh yeah, we can do the memorial outside under the tent. And the person from St. John's I was talking with, I said, if the weather's mild, can we do it under the tent? And she was like, the weather is not going to be mild. But I was in Kentucky dreaming away. Yes. What else? What else? Oh, yeah. There was an obituary for Kat in today's Gazette. Look up Kat Alonzo Budziak if you want to see it. What else tomorrow? Ooh, there will also be Bike Lab tomorrow. And, yup.
I found a bike today.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay
cost. Oh, wait, I forgot. I don't like bikes anymore. I'm not even riding a bike. I'm scootering. What do I care about bikes? Oh, well, anyway, bikes. A very cold winter day. We'll be in the basement. Bike Lab is usually outside, but it will be in the basement of 12 Northern Avenue tomorrow. So it shouldn't be any colder than 52 degrees, hopefully. And other announcements. I don't know if this qualifies as an announcement, but I decided to go to Trinidad next month, February 20th. I got a ticket to Trinidad. I was going to take a boat, but that didn't pan out. So I'm planning on flying and spending a month there and doing bike repair and stuff there. So I shipped a bunch of bikes there five years ago. And the remnants of those bikes are still around. My friend Giselle from Trinidad sent me a video of parts of those bikes and assorted stages of discomposition. And said, hey, Ruthie, so if you come in for a month, here's what we'd really love to happen. This is what could be super helpful for us. We have about 15 bike frames and assorted parts, but we need tubes, we need tires and rim strips. And if you're able to bring two suitcases, you should be able to get two 50-pound suitcases on the plane. And if you can pack them full of tubes and tires and other stuff, we'll let you know what else we could use. That would be such a great help if you could try to get those 15 or so bikes and parts that we have. If you could get like 5 or 6 working bikes out of those in the month that you're here for the farm and people at the farm community, that would be really amazing. So that's my mission when I go to Trinidad. That and eat coconuts and cacao, suck cacao seeds off the trees from the old cacao plantations. What else? Oh, here's another event I want to announce. Kestrel Land Trust. They host events, and one coming up next Saturday, January 31st, is winter wildlife tracking. Our region is full of wildlife. Okay, this is next Saturday, January 31st, 9 to 11 a.m. at the Mineral Hills. Our region's full of wildlife, yet most of the time it's difficult to see where the animals are or what they're doing. This usually changes in winter, when evidence of animals that hop, stalk, or waddle becomes easier to see and interpret in the snow. And we have snow, and I think we'll have some more snow. Even without much snow, wildlife often leave signs of their presence. Over the years of looking for wildlife in winter around the valley, we've seen signs of bear, beaver, coyote, deer, fisher, fox, otter, porcupine, rabbit, and more. Join us on Saturday, January 31st, 9 to 11, to learn the tips and tricks of winter wildlife tracking at the Mineral Hills Conservation Area in Northampton with expert naturalist and Kestrel Land Trust office manager, John Bodie. With his entertaining and accessible teaching style, John will show you how to identify the tracks various animals make based on their size, shape, and traveling mode, and learn how they interact with the winter world in the valley. And this program is for all ages, and registration is required with optional sliding scale donation. And you can register at the Kestrel Land Trust website. Now, speaking of such things like that, I'm going to play one last clip before Democracy comes on at 5. And this is my housemate Sarah talking about making some deer hides. Deer hides. Now, where is that clip? Oh, it was so close. I had that clip. It's coming. It's coming.
And in the backyard, we have Sarah. Sarah's in the snow with a knife. What are you doing, Sarah?
I'm exploring this deer hide pelt.
Where'd you get it? You can make it a long story. Make it a long story.
Well, the long story is I joined a Facebook group looking for hunters because I know it's deer hunting season, and I asked if anyone would give me some deer pelts. I'm very interested in learning and practicing ancestral skills and earth-based knowledge and being connected to how people have survived for a long time and having the skills that are directly connected to the earth and survival and living and thriving on the earth. So what did I do? A person replied and said he's a butcher in Westfield and that I was welcome to come and get some as many hides as I wanted.
Wow.
Pretty much. So I said, okay, I can come on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I took my bike with my two panniers and I took the bus from downtown Northampton to Holyoke Community College, and then I took another bus to Westfield, and then I biked a couple miles, and I showed up, and the person was very nice. I asked if he would throw in a couple of brains for brain tanning, and he was like, sure, no problem. And he helped me pack them up into my panniers, which he took it pretty much in stride that I showed up on bike, so that was nice, because usually people freak out, like, if you ride a bike somewhere that they don't think you can ride a bike to. Or they don't freak out, they just, you know, they act worried a lot. So he didn't seem worried at all, and he helped me cram one deer hide into each pannier, and then I decided to bike back, but I biked to East Hampton, and it was getting dark, so, and I stopped and visited my friend who lived in East Hampton, and then I took the bus home.
Do you know what the guy normally does with the pelts after he's butchered?
That's a I did not ask him. That's a good question. I was thinking that, but I was kind of, in the moment, I just felt like I just wanted to pack them up, and I didn't think to ask.
Yeah. How did you get the idea to join the Facebook group of hunters?
I was just trying to think of, because I know people where I'm from in New York who hunt, but I haven't really connected with any hunters that I know of in this area, and you know, it's just seemed like an easy way to find people. And mainly I'm interested in tanning, like bark or vegetable or brain tanning, and learning and practicing the process with animals that are either killed by a car unnecessarily or hunted and the person's not gonna do anything with their pelt anyway. So I just figured that would be an easy way to find people, and it worked. I mean, I had to go a little ways away because, I don't know, Northampton is maybe not, there's not as many hunters in Northampton as Westfield.
So can you describe the pelt? Oh, how much did it weigh? Like, it fit in your pannier.
Just barely.
You have big panniers.
I don't know, it probably weighs like 8 or 9 or 10 pounds. This is the smaller of the two. And it's pretty big, and there's actually quite a bit of meat still on it, so I'm going to save that and eat it.
Yeah, that's what's impressing me right now, all the meat on it.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, free meat,
yeah,
too, from the butcher.
Yeah.
Thanks. I've never done this, so I'm just trying to figure out how to do it. I've watched a lot of YouTube videos.
So you're going to get off the meat and flesh it. Yeah, flesh it. What does that mean, flesh it? Take off the flesh, I guess.
Yeah, take off the scrape off the fat and any meat that's left on it. Then I'll probably just freeze it. You can salt them and let them drip for a little while and then store them. But I want to wait till a sunny, I mean, probably it's in the spring, I think, is when people stretch them and dry them usually. But I guess I could do it on a sunny day, and then once it drips out, I could put it by the wood stove. But I'm just learning as I go, so
that's cool. Well, maybe I'll check back in. Oh, can I ask why you're wearing a garbage bag?
Well, I thought I was just gonna throw it up on the beam. It's they call it a scraping beam, and you scrape off the flesh and fat, but there's so much meat on it that I'm trying to pull it off with my hands first. But I was going to be leaning against the end of the beam, where the technique is to like lean it against the edge of the pelt to hold it while you scrape away from you. So I was just going to be leaning right on it. So I had this plastic bag as an apron.
Nice.
But, and I also found that PVC pipe. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Nice.
I had posted on FreeCycle asking for if anyone had an old piece of PVC pipe, because it makes a good scraping beam just because it's so smooth. So you don't put holes in it by accident.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And that was my housemate, Sarah, talking about, well, you heard it. She was talking about making deer hides, learning about that whole process. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. Thanks for tuning in to Out There today. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock on Fridays, we have Civil Politics. 7 o'clock, Kicking It Worldwide. Well, you can hear all the programs on Valley Free Radio. You can hear them. Well, you can hear them whenever you tune in, 103.3 FM. You can see them on the website, valleyfreeradio.org. Yep, this is Valley Free Radio. 103.3 FM in Florence, Northampton. So I mentioned Cat Bodziak's memorial tomorrow, and I just want to read the obituary. Cat Alonzo Bodziak, 57, passed away at home in early December. Cat is survived by her/their mother, Bobby Bodziak of Springfield, sister Carmen Bodziak Sullivan, and brother Toby Bodziak. Quote, "She didn't have much, but what she did, she shared," end quote. That's a quote from her mom. Cat was born in Springfield in 1968, moved to Northampton in the early 1990s, and stayed. Cat knew housing precarity, addiction and recovery, trauma and isolation, and had a heart that ached for people's struggles. They loved their cat Plato, plants, music, and literature. Cat wanted to meet people's needs and would sometimes collect and give away food and clothing in the park. They found their voice in writing poetry and creating art and making warrior ant Facebook posts and in taking a homemade bike rickshaw to City Hall with a "Housing is a Human Right" banner. "Remember to speak your story with a warrior ant's glory. Love, Cat." A memorial will be held Saturday, January 24th, 3 to 5 p.m. at St. John's Church, 48 Elm Street, Northampton. All right. Thanks for listening to Out There Today. I'm your host, Ruthie. And bye.